take our Bibles and turn to 2 Chronicles. I want to speak to you for just a few moments this morning on the subject of Joash's chest offering. Joash's chest offering. We could subtitle the message, Linking the Heart to the Purse. Linking our heart to the purse. 2 Chronicles and chapter 24. There was a man by the name of Robert Laidlaw that a few of us probably know anything about. He was, in his time, a very influential individual. He wrote a book. He was a businessman. He wrote a book entitled The Reason Why, and that book had quite a large reading for the day and age in which it was written. It was translated into 30 languages, and it was read by over 16 million copies were printed and dispersed. And so he was a businessman who had some degree of notoriety, and people listened to what he had to say. Robert Laidlaw had an interesting relationship with God regarding giving. And his giving has been called the Laidlaw's graduated scale. Here's how it works. At age 18, he began to give to God 10% of his salary at the age of 18. 2 years later, at the age of 20, he promised that he was going to give to God, continue to give to God, 10% of his salary up to a certain earning level. And then he was going to give God 15% of everything he earned from that earning level to the next earning level. And then he was going to give God 20% of his salary for everything he earned up to the third level. And then anything beyond that third level, he was going to give 25% of everything he earned to God. He made that commitment to God at age 20. 5 years later, he scrapped the entire scale. And he began to give 50% of everything he earned to God. Robert Laidlaw said at age 70, he said, in spiritual communion and in material things, God has blessed me 100-fold and has graciously entrusted to me a stewardship far beyond my expectations when, as a lad of 18, I started to give God a definite portion of my wages. Here's a businessman at the end of his life recognizing how God had richly blessed him. As a result of his love for God, his commitment to God. Why does money have anything to do with Christianity? You think of Christianity and you think of money and you think, why in the world is there a connection between Christianity and money? And the simple answer for that is that God left us with a mandate. And the accomplishing of that mandate is ridiculously expensive. The cost of world evangelism is astronomical. And the only way that that mandate can be carried out is for God's people to love Him more than they love money. So that they'll use money to forward God's agenda rather than using money to forward their own agenda. And that raises the whole question of stewardship. The whole question of stewardship revolves around ownership. Who owns what? We talk about my salary. We talk about my paycheck. We talk about my bank account. We talk about my house, my car, my clothes. We talk about my. You'd think we own stuff. And then we become Christians. Jesus Christ moves into our lives. We begin to read the Bible. We find out that the Bible is pretty emphatically clear. God owns everything. Everything that I list with the word my in front of it is not mine. It's God's. 100% of everything under my name belongs to God. He's the owner of everything. And He hires me. It's good to be employed, isn't it? He hires me. God hires me as a steward. A steward's not an owner. A steward is a manager of somebody else's possessions. God hires me as a steward and gives me the responsibility to manage a certain allotment of His possessions. The car I drive, the house I live in, the clothes I wear, the money in my bank account, in His bank account with my name on it. He hires me as a manager. And He says, I want you to manage my possessions in such a way that you will be the one who I will use to finance world evangelism. What does money have to do with Christianity? Everything. It's what God enables us to use to further His agenda. Well, what would cause someone like Robert Laidlaw to become so interested in God's program that beginning at the age of 25, through the end of his life, he gave half of everything he earned to finance God's work? The answer to that, there's only one answer to that question. It's love. It's love. It's his heart. It's the fact that money is always a picture of our heart. What we do with money is always a picture of what we love and who we love. And so money is a picture of our love for God. And that's what the Bible teaches in 1 Corinthians, rather than 2 Corinthians, when it says that how we use money is the proof of the sincerity of our love. So we would say of people like Robert Laidlaw that he did what he did because he loved God. And you know, when you fall in love with God, the more you fall in love with God, the more you grow in love for God, it changes the way you look at stuff. One of the powerful things in our lives is the ability to learn from the experiences of others. I learned from Robert Laidlaw. That resonates in my heart. I learned something from that. Learning from the testimonies of others is a very important part of life. Learning how God has worked in other people's lives. Stewardship principles are so vitally crucial in our lives. Here in 2 Chronicles chapter number 24, we read a story about a king. Let me step back a little bit. David had raised the money to build for his son Solomon to build the first temple. And they did. They built that temple for the service of God. Over the next several generations, the worship in Israel kind of caved in. Idolatry became prevalent. They took the furnishings that were in the temple used to the worship of Jehovah God, and they began to use them to worship Baal, and they began to use them in other idolatrous temples and places of worship. The actual building itself fell in great disrepair. Many years passed, and then there comes this king by the name of Joash. His grandmother had the family put to death so that the male heirs, so that they couldn't take the throne as king of Israel, and she usurped the throne and became the queen. She was a worshiper of idols, and the worship of Jehovah God fell into disarray, and the house of God fell into disarray. When Joash comes along, Joash has a burden to follow Jehovah God, to turn from the idols of his grandmother and those around him, and to rebuild the temple of Jehovah and reinstate the worship of Jehovah. That was his passion and that was his desire. The temple actually was 146 years old at this time. And now Joash wants to see this 146-year-old building that had not been used in quite a while to be put back into usable condition and re-equipped and reinstitute the worship of Jehovah God. And so he sets out to do that. And in verses 1 to 4 of the 24th chapter that we read, he has this desire. He wants to rebuild, to repair the house of the Lord. And so he turns to the leadership, the spiritual leadership, the priests and the Levites, and he gives them some instruction. He wants them to go out, and if you read the corollary passage in 2 Kings 12, you see that they were told to go out and to speak to the people they knew, their acquaintances, the part of Israel that they had influence over and had personal relationship with, and they were going to have a campaign to raise the money. And verse number 5 ends by saying that they were going to do this from year to year. And see that ye hasten the matter. Now that sounds kind of humorous to me. We're going to do this. It's going to take us years and years. Now hurry up. And at the end of the day, or the years, nothing happened. We don't really know why it didn't happen. We don't really know why the money never came in. We don't know if the people had such a distrust for the religious leaders that they didn't trust them to do what they said they were going to do. We don't know what was the reasoning behind the event not occurring. Maybe the Levites and the priests just weren't going to go out and become money seekers. And whatever reason, they didn't. And so after a period of time passed, Joash recognized that no money was coming in. And so he called them together in verse number 6. And he says, why? Why hast thou not required the Levites to bring out of Judah and out of Jerusalem the collection, according to the commandment of Moses, the servant of the Lord? Why didn't you go out and get the money? And so he comes up with another plan. He gets the idea of building a chest. And so in verse number 6, verse number 8, at the king's commandment, they made a chest and set it without at the gate of the house of the Lord. So Joash says, okay, the priests and the Levites are not doing their job. They're not going out. The money's not coming in. We're never going to rebuild this temple. Years. We're never going to get this thing done. And so Joash says, we've got to find a better way. And so he had someone build a chest. And he put the chest there at the house of God where the people would pass by it. And he told the people, I want you to give directly from your heart to the campaign to restore the temple. We're going to cut out the middleman. We're going to cut out the priests and the Levites. We're going to cut out the committees and all the things that would be in between. We're going to make a direct connection between your heart and the project that needs to be done on this capital campaign. And the only thing between your heart and the work of the carpenters is going to be this chest. Now I want you to know that back in the early 1980s, my wife and I had the privilege of visiting Israel. While we were there, we joined up with an archaeological team and did some digging around in Israel. And we actually found and shipped back the original Joash's chest. And here it is today. This is the chest that Joash used hundreds of years before Christ was born. And the salesman, the guy, told me that it was authentic. And it was real. So we shipped it back. When we got back here, traveled around the United States, I found out there's a whole lot of churches with the authentic, real Joash's chest that they shipped back. No, we didn't ship it back. Randy Rickard built it in 1998 when we had our first campaign, the Possess the Land campaign. And Randy built this chest as a picture of what Joash did that became very effective. At our first campaign, Possess the Land, we were just a small group of people and we didn't have any money. We were trying to buy a piece of land in Loudoun County. And so Randy built this chest, and we put into motion what we read in 1st and 2nd Chronicles about the capital campaigns that produced the resources for the buildings in the Old Testament. And people sacrificed. They sacrificed and they gave. We've got a picture. I should have gone and looked it up and pulled the picture, but we got a picture. There was one family that got so involved in the possessed the land that they were so dedicated, so committed, they actually gave their child. And so we have a picture of Amber Thomas standing in this chest on Possess the Land Sunday. And the Thomases dropped her off. And we raised her here at the church. She was here for a year. And they gave Amber for the Possess the Land. Joe Edge said, we've got to come up with a way to link the people directly to the project and remove all the middlemen, all the in-between stages, all the committees, and give the people that love the temple, the people who love the worship of God, the people who, from the depths of their heart, they want to see that temple restored. We're going to put a situation, put an environment where they have a direct link. And that has come to be known as Joash's chest down these thousands of years. Just a simple little story in the Bible where people were connected directly to the project that needed to be built, their hearts connected directly to the project. And for five, and now with moving up the sixth capital campaign that we reviewed the history of last week, we have at each stage, we have said, we're not going to have fundraisers. We're not going to have gimmicks. We're not going to go try to hire a company to come in and charge 10% of everything that comes in and come in and do some slick marketing. We're not going to go down those roads. Some do, and that, I'm not knocking them, others that go down those roads. But we said in 1998, we're not going to go down those roads. We're simply going to say to the church family, we have a capital need that will never be handled through the tithes and offerings. It's a capital project that will only be handled the way they handled capital projects in the Old Testament. And that is that the people who come here, who love God, who are willing to pray, as Rod mentioned a moment ago, God, what part of your resources do you want to channel through my hand into the project that is at hand? And at each stage, God's people, out of love for God, have responded not to slick advertising and sales campaigns, but they have responded from their heart, I want to see the worship of Jehovah God go forward. I want to be a part of making the facilities available through which we can minister to Northern Virginia. Now, with that in mind, let me give you the three steps. Three steps that were notable trends here in this story. The first one, look at verse number 9. Verse number 9, 2 Chronicles 24, verse 9. They made a proclamation through Judah and Jerusalem to bring in to the Lord the collection that Moses, the servant of God, laid on Israel in the wilderness, and all the princes and all the people. What's the next word? They rejoiced and brought in and cast into the chest until they had made an end. I want you to know there was joy. We've heard about that. That's been mentioned already this morning. There was joy. People, it wasn't they did what they had to do. It wasn't people who were their arm twisted behind their back. It wasn't that they're going to know whether I get involved or not. There was the people that had a sense, I want to have a part of what God is doing, did so, and the action of giving was marked by their joy. I went back through some old pictures, and I pulled out some old pictures. I want you to see just a few old pictures here. These are all old pictures from different campaigns and different parts of the building, of the warehouse and then this building. We did what we did because of the joy of our hearts. If there is not in your heart a love for God that overflows in a spontaneous joy to be able to see the upstairs finished, don't give. Just don't give. This is about love for God that causes joy when I sacrifice to make something happen that is important to me. You see, when God's people are in love with God, and they know that they need a facility, or they need a part of a facility, or they need something in the facility that the tithes and offerings of the normal regular giving would never be able to finance, would never be able to pay for. And they have an opportunity to see something happen. There's great joy to be able to be a part in what God is doing. I want you to notice there's a second step that is present in the experience of being a part of a miracle, and that's generosity. People who love God and see themselves as managers of God's possessions rather than owners of their possessions, people that have that spirit about them understand theologically the truth of that and then understand practically the reality of that, those kind of people become very generous people. And it's not necessarily the amount, it's the amount of what they have. And when that widow gave her last two mites, Jesus Christ drew attention to the fact that she gave a huge amount of money, even though it was only two little coins. It was huge because of what her heart was doing and the generosity that God had produced in her heart. Generosity is a very important part of that. Here's a couple of pictures. The picture on the right, you see the guy on the far right, the right-hand picture on the far right, that's Chris Sisler. That's Chris Sisler back as a teenage boy trying to impress the girls. Now, I don't know that he's doing a good job of impressing the girls on this one because they're carrying the weight. They're all working on a building project over in the warehouse when we were building out the warehouse space for our church facility. And the girls are doing the work, and Chris is acting like he's carrying it with one finger. But that was Chris as a teenage boy. The picture on the left is Chris today with his family down in Uruguay as missionaries. Why do I put that up? Because I want to read you something that Chris sent to me just a couple days ago, reflecting back on the Chris on the right-hand picture, a teenage boy in the youth group at CVC. He wrote me this just a couple days ago. He said, "The first capital campaign that I was ever involved in was Lay the Foundation. That was our second capital campaign." He said, "I was newly saved, a college student, and a waiter at Pizza Hut. Needless to say, I was not loaded with money to give away. During one of the Sunday mornings of the campaign, I was praying about what I should give." Here's a teenage boy who had just gotten saved at CBC, praying about what God wanted him to give. He said, "I didn't have much money. I was just a waiter at Pizza Hut. I was thinking maybe I could give $50. Or maybe at most $100. Then the Lord spoke to my heart, and the Lord said $500. Now, I was not accustomed to hearing God speak to me at that time. And when God spoke, I wasn't sure it was Him speaking. So when I thought He said $500, I chuckled. I thought, there's no way to give money that I don't have. And so I told God that I didn't have it and that He would have to recalculate. He responded to my heart that I needed to count the loose change that I had collected. You see, as a waiter, I got a lot of change for tips. Most of the waiters where I worked would count their change out at the end of the shift and exchange it for dollar bills. Well, I never did that. I always took my change home and placed it in a really big jar. So when I got home from church that afternoon, I went about counting all of this loose change. When I finished counting, it ended up being $500.25. A teenage boy who had just got saved, who said, I want to have a part in what God is doing at Community Baptist Church. And he began to pray, just like we're asking you to pray. God, do you want me to have a part? God, what part do you want me to have? Needless to say, this young Christian sat there shocked and astounded at what had just happened. I deposited all those coins. I want you to take note, he did not bring the coins to the tellers. Take note. I deposited the coins, and the next Sunday I was beyond excited to give a check in the amount of $500, knowing that God had spoken to me and guided me to do so. You see, when God's people love Him, when God's people want their life to be a part of what God is doing in their generation, and they pray and they talk to God about the stewardship of God's possessions that they have control over, and God begins to work in their hearts, one of the things that you see is generosity. They don't give because they have to. They give because they want to. They don't give because they felt shamed into giving. They were even told, if you don't do this out of joy and love for God, don't give. Don't have a part. Some of you went, whew, I'm off the hook. There is a connection between joy and generosity. In chapter 24, verse number 10, he had talked about how the people rejoiced and brought in and cast the money in. And verse 11 talks about how they gathered the money in abundance. It filled up the chest. They took the chest. They dumped all the money out. And they put the empty chest back out again. And then before they knew it, the chest was overflowing with money again. And they dumped out the money out of the chest. They put it back empty. And before you know it, the chest is overflowing with money again. There's a connection between joy and generosity in the lives of people who love God and want to be a part of financing God's work through the stewardship of God's possessions. By the way, not only is there a connection between joy and generosity, there's also a connection between miserable and miserly. They both come from the same word. Misers are miserable. And generous people are joyful. That just goes with the turf of loving God and seeing God work through your life. Let me give you the last step here. There was great success. Verse number 12 to 14, the Bible says they took the money and they put it in the hands of the workers who did the work. They repaired the carpenters. They hired the carpenters, the men who worked in iron and brass, the men who worked in gold. They had the money, the resources. As a matter of fact, they not only had enough money for the building, but they also had enough money left over for the furnishings to be used in the building. You read that as you go down through verse 14. The money was more than enough to do the construction work. They had enough money to buy the stuff they would use in the building. The building and the furnishings. It was a great success. And what that same group of people wouldn't give and couldn't come up with, as Joash challenged the priests and challenged the Levites, fan out across Israel, talk to all the people you know, tell them what needs to be done, collect the money from them, bring it back to Jerusalem, and they kept coming back empty, and some wouldn't even go out, nothing would happen. And they said, we've got to find a way to connect people's hearts to their giving. Those of you who are at Community Baptist Church or have been for a long period of time, you know that I don't often preach about money. I don't often speak about money. I speak a lot about love. Loving God. Because when people love God, they're filled with joy when the offering plates pass. They're generous when the offering plate passes. They find out that you cannot give God and He blesses their lives because of what they did when the offering plate passes. The reason I don't talk a lot about money or harp a lot on money or preach a lot on money is because it's not a money problem. It's an issue of the heart. If a person doesn't love God, the best I might be able to do is guilt them into giving something once or twice. But if they don't love God, they're not going to give. But if they love God, you can't keep them from giving. So my challenge as a pastor to try to help people fall in love with Jesus Christ. To love Jesus Christ more than you love stuff that money can buy. To love missionaries going to foreign fields more than you love stuff that money can buy for you. To have such a love for Jesus Christ that you want Him and His program and His agenda to be successful more than you want to enjoy the stuff that money could buy you to enjoy. And when God's people love God that way, God's people are generous people. And when they give, they don't give with guilt, and they don't give because they have to, and they don't give with a sour look on their face. They give with joy. And I believe that that's a big part of the reason why, after 22 years of ministry here in Loudoun County, that a church of the size of Community Baptist Church has been able to accomplish what it has. To build the building we've built. To be able to have the equipment and things to minister with that we have. To be able to have something from which to minister that we have. It's because of a lot of people who love God so much that they give from the heart generously, with joy. And God blesses it with success. It's what's going to happen in 2 weeks on November 12th, when we have opportunity to actually place in Joash's chest our gifts and our commitments to God to be able to enable us to move up. And we will move up and finish the upstairs if enough people love God enough and provide enough resources to do that. And whatever resources we have, that's how far we'll go and move it up. And it's directly from your heart to the upstairs. And we'll just see what God does as we all pray. I've been praying. I've been drinking my tea. I haven't drunk any coffee out of my moving up cup, but I've drunk a lot of tea out of my moving up cup this last week. I'm praying, God, what do you want to do through me on this campaign? What do you want my wife and I to do this time around? And let me encourage you. Pray, God, is this a worthwhile project for your church to finish the upstairs? And God, do you want me to have a part? And then just do whatever God tells you to do. And we'll rejoice in what God does through our lives. Let's see what God has to do through us as a church family.